From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in South Philly, where a young girl was growing up surrounded by family and, as she now describes it, surrounded by blackness. She lived with her family in a tiny apartment behind the Crispus Attucks Hotel. The Attucks was named for the person considered to be the first American killed in the Revolutionary War. It was also one of the few hotels in the area where black people could rent a room. The young girl, Bernadine, heard that Ella Fitzgerald and Hank Aaron and Billie Holiday had stayed there from time to time. Dean, as she was known, spent her early years playing hopscotch and skating or jumping rope on the block. She went to church. She swam and ran track. Family was tight. Family was everything. And when Dean became a writer, she felt those deep roots in so much of her work. But it wasn't until this past October that she was finally published with her memoir called Transplant. She had written poetry. She'd written about policy issues, written in publications like the Washington Post. But now she was ready to tell her own story, and it is earning serious attention. It wasn't easy. It doesn't mean that she got published on the first attempt here. There was a real stick-to-itiveness that had to happen. But now, Dean Watson has won the Washington Writers Publishing House Creative Nonfiction Award for 2023. She was named one of the 5 over 50 debuts in 2023 by Poets and Writers magazine. So it's never too late to get published. Or, as writers and books might say, it's never too late to move from the margins to the center. That's the theme of their conference that's happening this week. And it comes just days before the second annual National Black Authors Day. Our guests are here to discuss their ongoing efforts to bring authors from all backgrounds, yes, into our bookstores, into school classrooms, perhaps, or into our hands alongside our morning coffee where books belong. Let me welcome our guests now. Allison Myers is the Executive Director of Writers and Books. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Delighted to be here.
Welcome to Katyra Poland, who is the CEO of Love for Words and the founder of National Black Authors Day. Thank you for making it in and working us into your schedule today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. And on the line, let me welcome Dean Watson, author of Transplant, a memoir among many other works in her career in poetry and otherwise. Dean, thank you for making time. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, welcome to Sarah Micklem, who's the author of Firethorn, among others. And Sarah is going to be talking about, we're going to talk about feminist romance novels, because why not, Sarah Micklem? Great to have you. Thank you for making time for us.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
And Mary Gannon, Executive Director of Community, Literary Magazine and Press's CLMP. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
And before the program began, Allison Myers was raving about CLMP. We're going to talk about that this hour. Allison, do you want to start just by telling us what From the Margins to the Center is really designed to do this week?
Thank you. It's actually aiming to do a lot, but I guess boiled down to its essence is to connect writers to readers. And that's really at the heart of Writers and Books' mission. Writers need their readers, and readers need their writers. And yet so often on our radar screen, we are unaware of what our readers are reading and want to read, or our readers are unaware of what our writers are writing and are taking unbelievable deep dives into in terms of craft, in terms of subject matter. So when we say from the margins to the center, we're really talking about literatures that are in every way is profound and meaningful, and even more so than things we might see on the bestseller lists, but which are what we consider necessary readings as we live in this historical moment, this moment of how do we engage meaningfully with the zeitgeist, with our personal lives, with our own evolution as individuals, and ways in which we can stimulate dialogue across various silos. So these panels represent so many different ways in which writers are approaching the craft, are approaching getting the word out. Some of it is advice from the industry, such as Mary brings to us. Others are just really taking an interesting look at different themes and critical issues that are in the national conversation. So we're very excited to kind of stuff as many things as we can through these 20 different experiences into a 3-day literary conference, which is available virtually.
It's the kickoff event is in person tomorrow.
Yes.
So that's tomorrow at Writers and Books. And then the conference is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, From the Margins to the Center. People can still sign up, yes?
100%. They can even sign up the day of or the hour of.
So that I know through the Writers and Books website, they'd love to have you learn more and get registered. What's the website?
It's www.wab.org.
W-A-B.org. And, you know, I asked Katira Poland to come in here as well. I was thinking about this release I had the other day reading about National Black Authors Day. And I went, how come I don't know about this? And probably because we're in year two now,
yes,
right?
Just
so
year two.
More people are learning about National Black Authors Day. And Katira is the CEO of Love for Words. Tell us what Love for Words is.
Yeah, so Love for Words is an editing company. I also do copywriting, but primarily it's editing for self-published and hybrid published authors. So helping them get their manuscripts ready, but even more importantly, guiding them. I'm an author myself, so I know what that experience is like. So I'm there to give them feedback to help enhance their manuscript, make it better while maintaining their own voice, because of course it's their book. So I'm all about making sure they're good to go with publishing.
Would you say that you take them from the margins to the center all the time?
Absolutely.
Sounds
yes.
like you do. And Katira, for National Black Authors Day, which is coming up, what's the date on that?
May 4th.
May 4th.
Yes.
Tell us how you kind of conceived of this idea and what you hope it will become.
Yes. So I thought I wanted to have a day or a celebration for Black authors. So I just did some research to see if National Black Authors Day existed, and it didn't. I did find that there's a National Authors Day. I believe it's in November, but I wanted it to be more niched and more specific to Black authors and writers. And the reason I created it is to amplify our voices, to make sure that we're being valued, that our contributions are being acknowledged, and that we're being celebrated for all that we contribute. All that we contribute now, what we've contributed in the past, and also build a future for the next generation of Black authors and writers. So it's all about celebration.
I want to believe that in the future people will keep buying books. I want to believe that we're not just going to cede all of the creative work to the machines in the future, or we're not going to stop purchasing literature and art. I really want to believe that. And I know you are a believer in that.
Yes, I am.
Do you worry about the future and the trends, whether it's book purchases, whether it's the infringement of AI or technology? Does that worry you?
Not really. I still buy books. I still go to the library, and I know a lot of my colleagues and those that I work with closely do as well. So I feel that we'll be a part of keeping the book in hand alive versus the ebook and the audiobook. I do see those as great additions, but I think there are plenty of us who are keeping that alive. I know a lot of parents still take their kids to the library. I know when I was a child, I went to the library with my mom. So I do believe that is something that will continue.
I certainly hope so. Every time I hear somebody say, well, you know, I mean, look at AI. The poetry it's writing is actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. My response is usually, that's not a positive development here. I don't think that's a good thing that it's doing a better job at writing, creative writing. That's supposed to be what we do when it takes our jobs away and we need to fill our time with creating art. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yes.
I'm grateful that you're here, and I'm grateful that everyone is doing what they're doing. They all have sort of different skill sets and backgrounds and expertises. And before the hour began, Allison, you were raving about CLMP. Can you tell the audience a little bit about what CLMP is first before we talk to Mary?
A little bit, although Mary is absolutely expert and has really, since she's been executive director, really skyrocketed in terms of what the organization has achieved, moving from 500 members from the publishing community to 1,000, which is extraordinary. But they are basically there to support the small press publishing industry. And well, when I worked at CLMP for 1 year, I was aware of how multifaceted the organization is, ways in which we encourage authors and publishers to work together as a team, indoctrinating or educating people to all of the opportunities and challenges of the publishing zeitgeist, and also bringing to the forefront the qualities and services that small presses uniquely can deliver or achieve for their authors and audiences that some of the bottom line driven large publishers are not prioritizing. So there's a very deep, deep appreciation of the passion-driven, mission-driven projects that small presses are. So they connect with, they all have very specific missions. And Mary can talk more about it, but there's an amazing diversity of magazines and book publishers under that umbrella.
Well, I think, Mary Gannon, that what CLMP does is going to be even more important in the future, because I think, you know, sort of the high wattage authors and publishing houses will probably be fine. They can weather any technological or cultural changes, but we're going to need the CLMPs of the world, so no pressure. But how would you describe your own mission and what it is that you do, Mary?
Well, thanks so much, Allison, for that overview. CLMP, what we really do is work to ensure a vibrant, diverse literary landscape by helping small literary publishers work better. So what that means is that we provide technical assistance to publishers to help them sort of improve their operations. We also serve as we advocate for all of the good work that they do with other literary stakeholders like librarians and booksellers, readers, writers, and other folks. We do offer some funding for small presses and literary magazines as well. And then we have a series of awards which help amplify all of the good work that these small publishers are doing. And lastly, I'll just add that we do a lot of sort of facilitating of communication across the field and among these publishers so that they can share resources, know what they're doing with one another, collaborate, cooperate, all in the interest of trying to make sure that their good work is sustainable and, therefore that all the writers whose work they're publishing are also sustained by that.
Mary is an award-winning poet herself and is the co-author of The Poets and Writers' Complete Guide to Being a Writer. So would you like, Mary, to disabuse me of my concern for the future based on tech and AI? Are you thinking that that's all overblown?
Yes, I would like to debut you of that.
Okay.
I think that, AI is what it is. There are some authors even who are using it as a creative tool, but I would argue that there is absolutely no substitution for the kind of important stories that authors are writing. I think that there are so many important voices that need to be represented and heard, and that, good readers understand that their experiences and lives are sort of transformed by reading these books. And I just don't think that that's easily replaceable by technology and AI. I really don't.
Hear, hear. How do you feel about the efforts that a lot of these small publishers are making to try to bring more voices from, I'm going to keep saying it, from the margin to the center? The way I hear from the margin to the center is it could be authors who come from, literally just have backgrounds, identities that are often overlooked, not respected enough by big publishing houses, not supported. And it could simply be teaching people who have never been in the industry or have never been published how to go through that process and kind of navigate what is a difficult landscape. But in general, is it getting harder? Is any of it getting easier, Mary?
Well, I think that discoverability is always an issue, and there is sort of a disconnect between the commercial marketplace and the literary field in some ways. I think that smaller presses provide both a proving ground and a permanent home for the work of writers from underrepresented communities. Writers writing in genres that are less commercially viable as well, such as poetry, experimental work, really literary fiction, translation, and emerging writers who haven't established a readership yet. So these publishers are really foundational to the publishing ecosystem. Sometimes authors will start out with a small independent press and move on to a larger one. Other times they stay with them the whole time, depending on their careers and their take on things. But this sort of sector of publishing might be not as visible. You may not be seeing them emerge when you see bestseller lists all the time, although that's not always the case. I think there's plenty of examples of National Book Award winning titles that were published by small independent presses. And when it comes to literary magazines, you know, that's the place where agents are looking for sort of new, remarkable voices to represent, you know, and it's where writers first get their readership. So they too are really, really important to the whole sort of overall literary ecosystem as it is.
Is there an example of a success story recently, a breakthrough that you would point to say, you know, this is a great example of that kind of breakthrough happening with the support of something like CLMP, Community Literary Magazine and Presses, and it's, you know, a piece of work that should be in all of our hands now?
Well, let's see. I'm trying to remember. I'm so bad at coming up with examples.
I know this is like asking you for like your favorite child. And why don't I have Allison jump in here and then you can follow, Mary, because Allison's got her hand up. Go ahead, Allison.
Yeah. So this isn't this isn't very recent, but it is one of the outstanding examples. I'm thinking of Robin Wall Kimmerer's Braiding Sweetgrass, which was published by one of our prominent small presses. And interestingly, I think it's been reprinted and gone into an anniversary edition. And this is such a great example because it's kind of thematically one of these hybrid books in that it's not purely botanical. It's not purely spirituality. It's not purely Native American culture. And yet it is sort of a braided sweetgrass of all of those things. And this is an example of a press believing in an author and willing to take a risk, and the risk paying off. A lot of times, major publishers or the large publishers will ask the very formulaic question, who are you like out there in the literary in the literary ecosystem? And so, for instance, if you're an African-American author and you're a woman, they might say, are you like Maya Angelou? You know, so there are these like really restricted containers. And what a small press publisher will do is recognize the innovative nature of something that's imaginative and brings something so fresh and provocative. And that's what we really want when we're looking for great artistic products.
I want to say Braiding Sweetgrass is such an interesting choice there. Just the other day, two days ago, the Sierra Club of Rochester was on the program getting ready for a weekend event where they're giving away trees. And the guys here had dog-eared all these pages in Braiding Sweetgrass. They had it with them. My son in school has read it, and it is, seems to be everywhere. And it's only, I think, a few years old now.
Yeah, it was our Rochester Reads Choice when we were kind of in the pandemic, half in, half out. And Robin came and did one in-person event. The rest was all virtual. But, you know, it was... Had she been here for more in-person events, I think we would have been able to really embrace it in the ways you're talking about, because it is a book that has so many touch points.
Oh, it's amazing how many people I've bumped into who are telling me, have you had her on? You should have her on. And I say, yeah, she's been to Rochester. It's outstanding. That book has really, really taken off. It's a great example. Mary, is there anything else that you want to mention there?
Sure. I would just say, you know, I mean, there are so many, I think part of the problem is that there are so many important books that are coming out of the indie press world. I think one recent example is John Keane's book, which won the National Book Award in 2022 in poetry. It's a poetry collection called Punks. It was published by the Song Cave, which is a really small publisher. Grey Wolf Press, of course, is another huge independent publisher, but still considered, you know, they're independent. And a lot of the authors whose work they publish also have had profound influence on our culture. And Claudia Rankine is one author who comes to mind, who I remember talking about how important it was, how much she appreciated working with Grey Wolf, because they were willing to let her take creative risks that maybe another commercial publisher wouldn't have. And so, you know, that's one of the sort of key elements, I think, is that some of these presses are really willing to sort of make space and help in that creative, generative process in a way that because they're mission driven, a commercial, you know, they can do that in a way that like a commercial publisher might not be able to do because they're a little bit more focused on the bottom line.
Well, I want to ask Katira Poland, who's the CEO of Love for Words and founder of National Black Authors Day. Do you want to add to this mix of a piece of work that you think is either breaking through or should break through that should be on our radar?
I don't have one in particular. What I will say in regards to like some of the authors that I work with, a lot of the times I'm working with those who connect with hybrid publishers. So they're taking care of the back end of the work, but the author maintains all the royalties. So I just think a lot of times it's easy to overlook those books because they're self-published and hybrid published. But I have been blessed in all the authors that I've worked with, some local here, but I just feel like there are a lot of gems that don't have the visibility because they didn't go with a larger public, you know, publisher or even a small press publisher. So I think it's important for us to recognize there's a whole other realm of books out there that are not necessarily visible to us or well known. So that's my piece. I think that's also something that gets overlooked.
So May 4th is the second annual National Black Authors Day, thanks to Katira Poland.
Yes.
And pretty soon it's going to be bigger than you, and it's going to be out of your control, Katira.
Exactly.
That's what you want.
Yes.
How do you want people to be intentional and celebrate that day?
Yes. So some of the ways, I know last year I searched the hashtag National Black Authors Day, and it was all over the country just in year one. So as you said, I know it's going to grow even bigger. So there are people who hosted their book launches on May 4th. Some people posted videos just showing appreciation to their favorite Black authors. Other people maybe wrote a poem about National Black Authors Day or what it means to be a Black author or how it impacted their life. Some people chose May 4th as their published date for their books. So there are so many ways. Introverts, extroverts, anybody can be involved. Maybe you just want to visit a library and check out some books by Black authors or go on Amazon or websites and purchase books by Black authors. So really any way you can imagine. There are some people who hosted events. I know there's an event that's going to be in South Africa this year on National Black Authors Day. So again, there's really no limit. However you're comfortable celebrating, social media, on your own, tell the world, keep it a secret. It's up to you.
Well, I have a suggestion for a book. How about Transplant, a Memoir from Bernadine Watson?
Dean Watson
is on the line with us now. And I mentioned a little bit of Dean's story at the opening of this hour, but I think it's a powerful story of when you become an author and what your career has been like leading up to that point, because it doesn't mean that it's easy, but certainly, Dean Watson, it seems that it has been worth it for you. Do you want to tell a little bit of the story of how this book came to be?
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about that. My book, Transplant, is the story of my experience with kidney disease. I have had two kidney transplants and was on dialysis for 5 years. And if you follow the health news at all, you know that African-American people are more susceptible to kidney disease than other groups for a number of reasons. And after my second transplant, I really did start to think about how to tell this story, because I thought my own development through going through all of this was important, but also the issue of kidney disease and the African-American community was important. I started working with a local Black author as a coach. Her name is Marita Golden. I don't know if any of you know her, but she's a pretty well-known author and coach here in Washington, D.C. And she helped me to get my manuscript into shape. And I started by doing a business plan for my book and sending it out to agents that would recommend it to me, and nobody would touch it. I wasn't known, is what I was told. I wasn't an expert in the field of kidney disease, even though I had kidney disease and people do. Just because you have a transplant doesn't mean you don't have it anymore. I was really, after sending the manuscript out to about five or six different agents, I was ready to put it aside and maybe do some short stories from it, because I'm a writer in a number of genres, and I had also started to work on a book of poetry. But then I saw a contest of that was from the Washington Writers Publishing House, which is a small press here in Washington, D.C., and on a whim, I sent the manuscript in, and that was, you know, mid-year last year, and, well, no, I guess it was 2022, mm-hmm. and got a call in 2023 in about February saying that they wanted to publish Transplant. The main thing that they liked about the book was what they called my voice, that I had a way of talking about my own development through my own personal development by going through this disease, and that I was also talking about an issue that a lot of people did not know about. And so I was a voice that they thought had not been heard, and they were a small volunteer-run, small press that was interested in new voices. I don't think if I hadn't found, I think if I had not found Washington Writers Publishing House, Transplant might not be published.
Wow, what a story. And since its publication, you've not only been piling up these awards, I'm curious to know if you are starting to hear, I think that was published in October, so we're
yes.
6 months out, six plus months. Are you starting to hear from readers, and are you feeling a little bit more connected to a readership who has needed a book like this?
I am definitely starting to feel connected to a readership. I get sometimes emails from people who just found my book through a book festival mm-hmm. and have written to me to let me know that they want to know more about being a donor. They read the book because someone in their family has kidney disease. I just gave an interview with a young woman at Yale who's writing her dissertation on disparities in kidney disease, racial disparities in kidney disease, and she had found my book, I don't know how, but she was calling to interview me because she was doing her dissertation, and it was, you know, due on Friday. So we talked. There is a woman who does my manicures, whose husband is on dialysis right now, and I didn't know that. She just happened to be talking to me about her life, and I said, well, here I am, and I gave her a copy of the book. It's been amazing. I'm speaking in May at NephCure, which is a national organization that deals with caregivers of people with kidney disease in San Antonio. So, and I'll be in Minneapolis this weekend to do a book talk. So, yeah, I think the book is connecting, and I'm feeling really proud of myself that I stuck with it and stuck with the book.
And Dean, I want to follow that with a question about what your goals are as a writer now. And I don't know if this means now that the floodgates are open. You can keep writing. You write what you want. They know that your work is good. It's going to move. It's tough as a writer and as an author, as a person who wants to be an author. I've talked to a lot of people who have said, I feel like if I can just get in the door one time, then maybe you can stay in the door, but it's hard to get in that door. And I wanted to ask you if you view this as, you know, less of a vehicle for income and financial support and more of a, hey, I've got stories that I want to share and tell, and feeling connected to the world and having that impact is just as important as the financial aspect. How does that kind of break down for you?
Well, for me personally, I am fortunate enough to not have to write for income.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would say that I'm retired, even though I stopped working because of my illness, like in my 50s. But I don't really need the money. I have stories to tell. Now, do I think that writing Transplant and sort of so-called knocking down the door opens up the literary field to me? Not necessarily. Hmm. I feel that, Transplant has gotten some recognition, I guess, since it was also one of the books we love by NPR at the end of 2023. I think they picked 350 books or something like that, and it was one of those. So I could say that it's out there nationally, but you know, I don't take any of this for granted. I feel that I'm working on a book of poetry right now, and I don't know how difficult or not it will be to publish in that genre, because while I've had poems in various journals, I'm not sure it's going to be as I'm not sure that it's going to be necessarily easy. There's just a lot of books out there and a lot of people writing. Right now, I am definitely encouraged, but I'm not taking for granted that anything is going to be that easy. I have two more books I'd like to write, one of poetry and one of short stories about growing up in South Philadelphia. And I plan to do them, and I hope that the field will be receptive. I'm listening very hard about African-American Writers Day and all that. I'm taking notes.
Well, somebody somewhere is going to be reading Bernadine Watson's Transplant on National Black Authors Day, which is May 4th. Yes. You know that's going to happen, Katira. Let me just ask Mary Gannon from Community Literary Magazine and Presses. When you hear Dean say that, you know, she would love to write poetry, she's got short stories, she thinks about her time growing up in South Philly, she wants to write about that. Does the industry tend to say, hey, your first book, a memoir, was fantastic, but, you know, it was narrow, it was about transplants, and, you know, we don't know if we want to invest in your next work, or do they look at that and say, hey, you know, you're winning these awards, you're on these reading lists, and we're going to open it up. Is there a typical process that tends to happen, Mary?
I think that, well, first of all, I just want to say congratulations again to Dean. And you know, I had the honor of listening to her speak a little bit about her book in when Poets and Writers did an event for their five over 50 section. So that was great to hear. And I'm so grateful to hear even more. And also, as Dean said, that her publisher was really interested in her voice. And I think that that is the thing that is, you know, that all publishers are looking for. So to answer your question directly, I would say that I think her success having published one book is always a plus. You know, she obviously has developed a platform and a readership. Those are the kinds of things, along with, you know, obviously fine craft and a singular voice that publishers are going to be looking for despite the genre. So I predict that she will have success.
And Katira Poland, what stands out to you from Dean's story about her success here, but also, you know, maybe her questioning about whether that door will stay open in the future for her?
Yes. So what really stood out to me, again, is that the publisher appreciated her voice, because so often, you know, sometimes the authors that I work with are afraid of their voices being removed, or they've worked with editors who don't understand their manuscripts. So they've been rewritten, or they've been judged unfairly for the culture that they're writing about or the content that they're writing about. So I can understand why she may not feel it won't necessarily open other doors, but I would encourage you and others to stay open-minded, because again, there are other publishers like that one who are open to maybe the stories who are often overlooked, or the voices who are unheard or ignored. So I think it's a positive outlook for all authors that there are people out there who want to represent you and care about what you have to say and your story.
After we take our only break, I'm going to bring in Sarah Micklem, who is the author of Firethorn and is also going to be part of this conference that's happening this week with Writers and Books. It's From the Margins to the Center. There's an in-person kickoff event at Writers and Books tomorrow. And then they've got various events with some of our guests on the program today happening Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And if you go to WAB.org, they'd love to have you. You can sign up. You can see the full schedule. You can learn all about From the Margins to the Center. We've been talking to Allison Myers, Executive Director of Writers and Books, and in studio, Katira Poland, who is the CEO of Love for Words and founder of National Black Authors Day, which is coming up on May 4th. It's the second annual event. And Katira is is really the creator of this event, but this event now is really growing in well beyond Rochester. And then with us, you just heard Dean Watson, the author of Transplant, a memoir. Sarah Micklem will join us in a moment. Mary Gannon, the executive director of Community Literary Magazine and Presses. We're coming right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Thursday on the next Connections. AI and cancer. Could artificial intelligence do a much better job than humans at finding out when someone is vulnerable to cancer, or maybe when cancer is in its very early stages? Could we see much better treatment? We'll talk about that. In our second hour, we could see a new Golden Girls reboot. Are we out of ideas as a society, or is it fun to reboot? Nostalgia. We'll talk about it. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me squeeze in a phone call from Ron in East Rochester, who has a question for the panel. Hi, Ron. Go ahead.
Hi. I am a novice poet, and I've written probably 150 pieces, the full spectrum of range, everything from nonsense to free verse. And I'm just wondering if there's somewhere I could send my stuff to, just to see if it's got any merit, not necessarily to see if it's worth being published or anything, but I've tried sending things to a couple magazines, New Yorker, et cetera, and never got any kind of an answer. And I'm just wondering if I could get some suggestions from your guests. And I'll take any kind of comments off the air. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ron. I think the fact that you're doing it all is beautiful. I think it's great. Mary Gannon, do you want to offer some insight there?
Sure. I think that Poets and Writers is a great resource for writers. If you go to their website, pw.org, they have a variety of information to offer. I think one place to start, everybody wants to be published in The New Yorker, and they receive so many submissions that is super, super competitive. But if you go to Poets and Writers, they have a database of literary magazines, and you can kind of search according to what their editorial missions are. And it's a good place to try to pair your work with an appropriate publication to submit it to. I know you said you were just looking for somebody to review it at all. I think Poets and Writers also might have some information about, potentially like freelance editors and things like that. I want to also say that CLMP, we have a directory of publishers as well on our website. Our website is clmp.org. And again, you can sort by or filter by, what the publishers are looking for. So those are two good resources as a way to start.
Well, I want to bring in Sarah Micklem, who is the author of Firethorn, among other works. And I just had a chance this morning to watch a panel discussion that Sarah was part of. And I was surprised at how riveted I was to this. Sarah, it was so interesting watching this group talk about feminist romance novels, and you're going to be helping lead a conversation as part of this conference on the feminist romance novel. So I have to start by asking if listeners may be wondering, Sarah, is there a difference between just romance novels writ large and feminist romance novels?
Not really. I think what you're finding now is that feminism has sort of become part of the DNA of romance. And we talked a little bit about that and how romance centers female pleasure and joy and in the discussion of relationships, and that's something that is not always valued in other kinds of literature.
Sure. And there were some panelists who even admitted that in their own sort of history of being a reader, they might have dismissed the notion of romance novels until a certain event pushed them to spend more time with it, whether it was the pandemic or otherwise. And then all of a sudden it was like a switch flipped. For you, what has that process been like? And can you describe for listeners who don't know your work what it's about?
Well, my novels, Firethorn and Wildfire, take place in an imaginary world. So I always considered them fantasy. I didn't consider it romance. They came out in the 2000s. So I've had a bit of a shift now towards romance in my writing, now that I'm picking up writing after a long gap, because I really want to write something joyful. Firethorn and Wildfire are books about a woman who goes to war and she's in the very lowest strata of society. And it's just very difficult material. And during the pandemic, I needed joy and I needed to have stories that just carried me along. And I liked the guarantee of the happy ending. That was important to me. So now I'm thinking about how I can do that for readers instead of, you know, dragging them through violence and misery.
Sure. And do you...
I mean, you got to have some misery in order to drive your plot.
Sarah, is this a genre that does get marginalized or taken less seriously?
Well, of course. I think we all know that a lot of the genre fiction, that includes romance, science fiction, fantasy, horror, and young adults and children's fiction, have been really pushed to the margins for a long time. But one time I saw a panel with Walter Mosley and Neil Gaiman, and Mosley just challenged people to think about what is the real small genre. It's actually literary fiction. Because romance, for instance, gets about a 33% market share. So it's not really a marginal thing. Mm. But it's the way it's conceived of as marginal, with the important work in quotes, in the center, and then these other things arranged around it in those far-off colonial territories that are represented by shelves in certain areas of the bookstore, usually the back or the second floor or something like that.
Mm. Well, what starts to maybe change when there's a genre that gets marginalized in the way that you're describing? What is the corrective for that, Sarah?
Well, what I'm seeing in science fiction and fantasy, which I'm more familiar with because that's what I loved reading all my life and what I tried to write, what I'm seeing is that there is a kind of weird corrective going on, in that a lot of people who write literary fiction are now writing fantasy, what I would call fantasy and science fiction, and it's in the front of the store, you know, in the featured aisles and mm-hmm. everything. And but they may think they're doing something brand new, although I think a lot of them probably read science fiction and fantasy when they were kids. But there was actually a lot of great work going on in that field all along. So how to bring the people who are already practitioners over the wall, so to speak, that is really hard. And I have only really seen it happen with Ursula Le Guin and Octavia Butler lately. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. And talking to Sarah Micklem, whose books are Firethorn and Wildfire, the sequel, very, very well reviewed. And Sarah is going to be part of the upcoming event with Writers and Books. Do you share your colleagues on this panel, their optimism about the future of literature, about the future of the human capacity to decide to pick up books and read them and buy books? Or are you pessimistic about what's happening?
I think stories are so important to human beings. I mean, forever. This is probably what we were doing at the beginning of language. So I'm not worried about people wanting to consume stories. However, I am a graphic designer, and I am worried about AI taking people's jobs, because it's already happening. It's already happening in the work that is intellectual, that is design, illustration, and writing. It's happening, folks.
Mm. And to the extent that it is happening, Sarah, is it inevitable? Or do we have a choice as a people, as a culture, to say, you know, just because we can do this doesn't mean that we are going to mainstream this?
Well, theoretically, there's a choice. I mean, they may be banning TikTok because it has Chinese owners, right? So I suppose there are ways to limit it. And also there would be ways to limit AI stealing intellectual property, which is how we came to a point where it actually worked, is that they scraped up intellectual property created by human beings without any payment and put it into giant machine learning that needed vast amounts of information to become good. So So, yes, we could make those decisions, but I'm not sure I see that happening.
Well, Sarah, the one place that I get much more optimistic is when I think about the legal sphere, and it kind of goes to what you just mentioned here. If AI is getting better, and we can all, I guess if we can at least see the idea that AI is improving when you ask it to write something quote-unquote new, whether it's poetry, fiction, whatever, it can do it. It can give you 60,000 words pretty quickly. But I would contend that it is not creating out of whole cloth. It is taking a universe of input, and we don't know if it took a slice of Katyra's writing or Allison's piece that was published in a magazine or Mary's poetry or Dean's work or yours, Sarah. We don't know what the genesis is. AI is so sort of sort of opaque that we probably won't know. But I would contend that there should be probably more in the legal sphere to block this, because not only is it going to potentially threaten others' work in terms of crowding out the marketplace, but it is literally taking from your existing work, and it is amalgamizing in ways that we can't even track. And I don't think that's new creation. I kind of think that's theft, but I don't know if that's too far, Sarah.
I think so, too. I mean, it's definitely using other people's intellectual property, and in an invisible way, in a way that can't be tracked, and is opaque because the companies that are doing it make it opaque. That's a choice, too.
I think so. I don't know if I heard Dean jumping in there.
Well, I was just saying that I think it's theft also. I hadn't really thought about the fact that AI could be just sort of taking from some things that I've written that are online. But yeah, that's theft.
Well, I'm going to be, as a separate point, I will be following any legal developments, and listeners can keep us apprised at connections@wxxi.org, because, you know, the New York Times has had something to say about that, and other artists in different spheres have. I would not be surprised if there's a lot of movement legally pretty soon on that, but we shall see. We've had a wonderful hour, and I do want to ask Allison Myers, the executive director of Writers and Books, to describe for listeners before the hour is up here. You know, we've had a chance to get to know Sarah and Dean, Mary. You've got this conference coming up here. What the structure of the conference will be, and what you hope will draw people in here, Allison?
The structure is a fantastic in-person opening reception on Thursday. I think that's tomorrow, the 24th, from 5 to 8 at Writers and Books, Ampersand Books, 740 University Avenue. And we have six amazing poets who will be giving a live reading, 6:15 to 7:15. Please go on the website to read their bios. Another demonstration that our city, our region, has phenomenal wealth of brilliant poets and writers who are right available to us in our backyard. We don't need to go far afield to discover enriching stories, as Sarah would say. So please do make a point of attending that. There'll be refreshments, and it's free. Also, we'll be selling all conference book titles at a 15% discount. Then following that, beginning on Friday it starts in the afternoon, and then goes all the way through Sunday evening, are 20 different panels, readings, workshops. And the neat thing is when you get a ticket, you have access to those events for 90 days. So if this schedule does not fit into your current calendar, sign up and take advantage of listening, watching later. It's also the case that a number of them are 100% free. They're offered on the a gift economy model. You can select a ticket, the price that's right for you, between 0 and 20. And others are below market price, with special discounts for seniors and students, with need-based scholarships available. So the point is to make this conference as available as possible. We've had folks signing up from all different states in the country so far, which is really cool. And please tell your friends and colleagues who like books or are emerging or as published writers, this is a conference not to miss, because we have everything from a panel on reproductive freedoms to LGBTQ+, to new forms in memoir, Dean's panel 3/50, disability justice in the literary landscape. Our own BOA editions is giving a reading and a conversation, a poetry workshop with Annie Finch, of course, the feminist romance novel, et cetera, et cetera. Please explore the website.
WAB.org. And in our last minute, let me ask Katira Poland to remind listeners, as you get ready for May 4th, hey, this is a great, make it a holiday and give someone the gift of a book. What do you think about that, Katira?
Yes, that's also a great idea. So again, if you want to gift books, you can donate them to your local library or organizations, schools. Give them to your family members, whoever you feel needs a book. Make sure you get one to them on May 4th.
May 4th is the second annual National Black Authors Day. You will find Black authors at Ampersand Books, or probably wherever you, wherever you find your books. Independent local bookstores, always probably ideal, but you can find them wherever you find books. And I want to thank all of our guests for making the time. Katira Poland is the CEO of Love for Words, the founder of National Black Authors Day. Thank you for making time for us today.
Thank you.
Thanks to Allison Myers, Executive Director of Writers and Books. Have fun this week.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Mary Gannon, Executive Director of Community Literary Magazine and Presses. Mary, thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Author Bernadine Watson, Dean's the author of Transplant, a memoir. It is out now. Dean, congratulations. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Sarah Micklem, author of Firethorn and Wildfire, and also coming to the conference. Sarah, thank you for being with us this hour.
Thank you. It was so fun.
Wonderful conversation this hour. And from the whole team at Connections, it's Gary and Miles and Megan and Evan saying thanks for listening. We are back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.